I don't want to squander what was given to me.
Welcome, and this is Far Betterment. Welcome. You've got mail. Nah, just joking. Welcome to another episode of Far Betterment. Today, I'm joined by the talented Stephanie Gale. Stephanie is a artist, musician, singer, songwriter, you name it, out of New York. I was lucky enough that Stephanie decided to join me for a conversation here on Far Betterment. Stephanie has an album out right now called Songs About V that you should all check out. I highly recommend it. You can find Songs About V on iTunes, Spotify, Google, SoundCloud, pretty much anywhere that you can think of to listen to music, you can find Songs About V, so check it out. So without further ado, here's Stephanie Gale for Far Betterment. Well, why don't you, introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about, you know, your upbringing and how you got into music to begin with.
Well, my name is Stephanie Gale. I currently reside in Brooklyn, New York. I grew up in Prince George's County, Maryland. I grew up in a small town called Lanham. And I'm the youngest of three kids. Grew up in a pretty much a single parent home. My dad was around, but my dad is a veteran, a Vietnam veteran.
Okay.
And at one point he was one of those homeless Vietnam veterans. He is no longer. He's doing very well right now. But grew up in a suburban area. My mom worked for housing and urban development. Sorry.
Oh no, you're fine.
That was too loud. I used to live on a noisy street. My mom worked for housing and urban development. Like I said, I'm the youngest of three kids. I have an older sister and brother who are closer in age. I grew up in a household that was filled with music. I come from a family of singers and musicians. I'm actually a descendant of W.C. Handy on my dad's side, who is a... He's known for being the first person to ever put out a blues record or blues recording. They call him the father of the blues. So I have that, that legacy on that side. And also on my mother's side, I grew up with singers and performers. And I have a cousin who actually was one of Bo Diddley's original backup singers.
Oh wow.
And actually if you go on YouTube, you can see videos of her performing with him. So that's that's also a pretty interesting legacy to have as well. But it's in my blood. I've been singing for as long as I can remember. I've always been deeply in love with music. I'm also a fine artist as well. I have a degree in fine arts. My mother was my first teacher. I played different instruments growing up. I played the trumpet, the French horn, played a little piano, took lessons for a while. I started songwriting when I was 8 years old. And started doing production when I was 16. It's always been a big part of my life. What can I say?
Do you remember the first time, like in front of a crowd, and how that felt?
The first time I performed solo in front of a crowd, it was actually in eighth grade. it was in a history class, and I had a teacher by the name of Mr. Brooks, and he had an assignment where we had to either sing the national anthem or the Black national anthem. And it was a pretty fun assignment. No one knew I could sing at the time when I was in school. You know, I was more so known as the kid that could draw. Did the assignment. I sang the Black national anthem, and people just, you know, initially they were kind of chattering. They didn't know how it was going to sound. You know, they weren't sure. And then once I opened up and sang, like, it just became quiet. you could hear a pin drop, and it was, you know, people were just floored, you know. And after that, my history teacher made me sing that song another 3 or 4 times over the course of the week. So that even brought my music teacher to tears, because she had no idea that I could sing.
That's pretty.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing.
Amazing, yeah. That's beautiful. What do you remember that feeling was like?
It was. I was touched that I was able to, you know, touch her in that way.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. She had a very. I don't know. She didn't always have a very favorable opinion of me. I was just a quiet kid, but, and like I said, I used to play the trumpet.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I wasn't the best at it at the time. Well, you know what it was? When I was in a crowd or when I played in front of people, I didn't play that well. I played better when I was kind of on my own and, you know, doing my own thing.
Yeah.
I was a very shy kid. So, you know, that was tough for me. So when she heard me sing, it was like, oh, she's opening up and this is what she can really do. So, you know, it changed her opinion of me and her perspective of me. And it changed a lot of opinions and perspectives of me, you know, for so many other people that, you know, that saw me sing at that time. You know, kids were like happy to be associated with me, like, hey, this is my friend, she can sing. And, you know, for me, it was, I mean, having that kind of attention is always a little weird, but it's also, you know, kind of cool as well. So, for me, it's the most important part is, you know, touching people's souls and making them feel, you know, some sort of happiness and, you know, joy when I perform. So that's the thing that means most to me.
Was stage fright ever a factor for you, or did you, I mean, obviously you knew you could do this, you know, you knew that you had it in you. What stopped you?
I think, like I said, just, garnering too much attention. I'm a person that kind of values their privacy. And I, you know, there are times where, you know, I want to be on my own, and I just want to have my time to kind of regroup and meditate and, you know, make sure my mental faculties are in order. And, you know, I'm just one of those people that I value the quiet time that I have. And when it's kind of diminished, it makes me uncomfortable. You know, I don't know. I can be very personable, but there are other times where it's like, okay, this is not the time for me to be personable. And I just like to have some kind of a bit of control over, you know, when I can have that time.
Okay.
Sometimes when you have that much attention, sometimes you have to sacrifice, you know, in order to, you know, to serve the needs of others. So,
how do you? Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that's yeah, I think that's the thing that keeps me, you know, I guess it kind of stops me short of really like putting myself out there, at least for, you know, a while it was like that.
Okay. How do you reconcile that now? You know, obviously you've got an album out and stuff like that. So the attention's got to be there in order for somebody to, you know, somebody believes in you enough to, you know, want you to do this. How do you garner, or how do you reconcile that attention?
I mean, I think at the end of the day, especially, I mean, most recently I just realized that music is just something that makes me happy. Mm-hmm. And I do enjoy making other people happy. And I don't want to squander what was given to me, you know. You know, I feel like I have something to say. And I feel like I have, you know, I have messages that need to be conveyed. And I want to share that with other people. You know, I want to, I think with songs like Vulnerable, which is, I think that's like a fan favorite from the album.
Yeah, I really liked that song.
Yeah, I think it's a deeply personal song. And, you know, when I perform it, it's, you know, people really respond to that song. You know, they really resonate with the lyrics and the message itself. And it has helped a lot of people, you know, deal with the fact that they're not alone when it comes to, you know, that feeling of being depressed and going through, you know, the symptoms and you know, the things that you do experience with depression. So, I mean, to see that kind of response, I mean, it's priceless. and, you know, I mean, after that, I did that song recently in Williamsburg, and, you know, after the show, people came up to me and hugged me, and it felt, you know, felt like they could relate with me or relate to me on a personal level, like we shared something special. So I think ultimately when I sing now, I keep that kind of intention in mind. Like I want to connect with people and I want people to connect with each other, you know? So I feel like I need to put myself out there for that reason.
I think that's a really beautiful way to look at it. You know, it's, I'm not sure I've ever heard anybody describe depression and things like that before, where they want it to be a tool rather than something that holds them back. So I think for a lot of us, because I suffer from depression myself, and it's a difficult thing to overcome, first of all, if you know, and it's something you live with your whole life. But right. Not everyone uses it as a tool or can use it as a tool. So I think it's beautiful that you said that. And then I really like that you said, you know, you didn't want to squander what God gave you. I think that's incredibly selfless of you to, look at your gift like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's
something that I had to overcome, like for so long that my fear was crippling me. Like it was keeping me from doing so much. And, I think I lost so much time because I was afraid to put myself out there and to really, make myself vulnerable, you know, so to speak, for other people. And, you know, I look at it now and it's, like I said, it's just like, this is where I'm happiest. This is my happy place. And it's, you know, when I have put myself out there, it's brought so much, it's brought so many things into my life, positive things into my life. And, I just want to, you know, keep that going, you know? And like I said, it's my happy place. And I, you know, I like you said, I reconciled with that fear. And I just, you know, I don't know, I guess I took a leap of faith. It's just like, you know, no matter what happens, I, you know, I made the music that I enjoy. And yeah, that brings me the most joy. Like, I'm happy about that.
I love seeing that. I genuinely love seeing people doing what they want, what makes them happy, you know?
Yeah, I
love that. I don't know. I've always just really enjoyed that. So why don't you tell me, you know, the process, I guess, of writing this album and a little bit about the story behind it.
So excuse me. The background story is, well, I mean, the album's called Songs About V, and it's about a woman named V. I won't, you know.
Sure, yeah.
You know, her full name. But I met this woman, V, in 2011. I was doing a performance in San Diego, California. And before the show, we hit, I was with a group by the name of Bop Alloy, which is my mentor, Substantial, and a producer by the name of Mark DeCee, lives in Japan currently. But we were in San Diego to do a performance at University of California in San Diego. And before the show, we did an in-store, and it was there that I met V. I didn't know who she was, at the time. And I didn't know that she was a fan of the group. And she had a partner with her, a male partner. And, he was the fan. And, my mentor was like, you know, this person is coming. He came all the way from, St. Croix, Virgin Islands. And, you know, just show him the utmost respect. You know, he's a big fan, and you know, just, you know, show him, you know, all the love that you can show him. You know, just kind of. So we met him. He was a very nice guy. You know, very charming, and I met her, but it was kind of like I said, we were more focused on the gentleman at the time. But she and I had talked a little bit, and I kind of got the feeling that she liked me, but I didn't want to, you know, he had introduced her as his queen. and I was like, okay, I don't want to get into that. I don't want to, you know what they're together. I don't want to, you know, touch that at all. So I just kind of kept my distance. It didn't really give her the energy. And then later on, she didn't know that I was singing for the group, Bop Alloy at the time. She didn't find out until later on when I jumped on stage. And throughout the entire performance, I could hear her screaming out and screaming my name and, you know, really like showing me a lot of love. But it was a great show. And I, you know, everything went well. And then after the show, I kind of sat on stage and kind of watched people, you know, I like the people watch sometimes. So I was just kind of looking around and observing people and watching my friends, kind of engage with the fans. And she came up to me and asked, if she could sit next to me. So I was like, yeah, sure. You can sit by me. We just began talking, and she started talking about her life. And at a certain point during the conversation, she asked me if I was fam. And, you know, in the LGBT TYA world, if you ask if someone's fam, you're asking if they're, you know, if they're gay or not.
Okay.
And yeah.
No, I didn't. So, and thank you for educating me, because I did not know that. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, if they say fam or family, yeah.
Okay.
That's usually that's what it means.
Okay. That's so really nice, actually. I like that.
Yeah. So, you know, she asked me that, and it kind of threw me off guard because I didn't expect her to ask that. So it was just kind of like, come again? What was that? She asked me again, and I said, yes, I am. And she was just completely elated, like, oh, so am I, and gave me this really, really long hug. And also, you know, like in the queer world, if someone gives you a really long hug, they like you.
Okay.
So she hugged me for a good, I don't know, maybe 45 seconds.
That is a long hug.
Yeah. So I was just kind of like, okay. And, you know, at some point I did like kind of try to pull away too, but she was holding me so tight. I just remained in the embrace. But then we just continued to talk, and she was talking. She told me a few things about her child, and how she was afraid that her child might be queer as well. And we just, you know, I just let her know, like, we've been through, you know, the kind of upbringing where we weren't able to really talk to anyone or converse with anyone regards to our feelings, and we just didn't have that kind of outlet, mm-hmm. you know, growing up. I'm like, you have the opportunity to, you know, show your child a different kind of upbringing. You know, you can act as the outlet for your child. You know, you can make your child feel comfortable in embracing who they are. So we kind of talked about that. And, after the conversation, you know, we exchanged information. It was mostly like Facebook information. and she went back to St. Croix. I went, you know, back to New York. And we remained in touch. And then at some point we started to be attracted to each other. You know, during that time, we knew that we kind of had the mutual feelings. I asked about her partner, and she had explained to me that she had explained to him early on in their relationship that she was queer, that she was attracted to women. And, you know, that wasn't going to change. He was one of those gentlemen that I guess he kind of pursued her and was very persistent about pursuing her. And at the time, there's so many layers to this story, but she had moved to St. Croix and she was with a woman. And the woman, they broke up, and the woman left her on the island, and she was by herself. So this gentleman came along and offered to help, you know, take care of her and her child, and help her, you know, I guess maintain her lifestyle at that time. So it was kind of a relationship of convenience for her. So she wasn't in love with him or anything like that. She liked him as a person and as a friend, but she wasn't really, very attracted to him. And he had also expressed that, you know, if she wanted to move on and, seek a relationship elsewhere, he was okay with that. So I figured, okay, well, there's no issue with us, like, you know, being involved. We just need to talk to him about it. So she ended up speaking to him about our relationship. And I had spoken to him as well, briefly on the phone, and he seemed to be okay with it. But apparently when he was off the phone speaking to her, he wasn't a fan of us, you know, talking and you know, in that capacity.
Okay. That's interesting.
So, at some point, however, we wanted to, see each other again. And I had booked a flight to, St. Croix to see her. And also speak to him, further about the relationship. But as I was speaking to him, I became, more uncomfortable with speaking to him because it seemed as if he was kind of indirectly threatening me.
Oh, wow.
He wouldn't say it. Like I said, he wouldn't say it directly, but just the way that he spoke, it seemed as if he had ulterior motives.
Okay.
And, you know, I told her and she was like, "Oh no, he's not like that. He's a very kind hearted person." And I'm like, "No, I don't know. he wants to, you know, do a lot of activities where it's just he and I, and you know, I just don't feel very comfortable with that." But I ended up going on the trip anyway, and she and I met up, and at a certain point during the trip, he stalked both of us. He actually stalked me for about 3 days.
Wow, that's terrifying.
Yeah, and it was especially terrifying because, you know, I don't drive, and you know, I'm on this island that I've never been to before, and you know, it was the first time that I had ever flown off of the mainland, United States.
Okay.
It was, I guess, quote unquote, I guess, kind of my first international trip, even though Virgin Islands is a U.S. territory. It's nothing like the U.S. Okay. If you've ever been.
No.
Yeah. it's very unfamiliar.
Okay.
And they don't have a lot of transportation there. I mean, they have little taxis and buses that come every now and then. But it's very difficult to get around.
Okay.
So just being there on an island that I was really unfamiliar with and, you know, knowing that this man was, you know, coming after us and trying to find ways to track both of us, it was really, it was a really terrifying time. But I ended up, you know, leaving the island and, I was, you know, unharmed, unscathed, what have you. She remained there, but she did eventually move away from him. I had had several conversations with her. I told her, you know, you need to get away from him. He clearly has, you know, issues. You know, he became increasingly more verbally abusive towards her after I left. And it was just, you know, I spoke to her and I told her, you know, it's just not a conducive, environment for you or your child.
Yeah.
So you guys should, you know, get out of there somehow. So I sent her money, to help her, you know, move away and return to the United States. Cause she was originally from, North Carolina.
So, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So she eventually left him, returned to North Carolina, stayed with some relatives. By that time, we were, I guess, very much in love. We were talking on the phone every day and, you know, and we had built up a very deep relationship. However, by the time she left St. Croix and went back to, and returned to, North Carolina, the relationship had changed a bit. I honestly didn't know where we were. you know, I contacted her to make sure she was there safely. She was very, anytime we spoke, she was kind of agitated. And she was like, you know, I don't want to get into a relationship right now. You know, this is, I'm really trying to rebuild my life and, you know, get things back together. And I'm just not, I don't want to focus on a relationship. And I said, that's fine. I just want to help you, you know, get yourself back on your feet, you know. But of course, like 3 weeks after she had returned to the United States, she began dating someone else, which was, you know, very awkward and you know, caught me off guard.
Sure. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. And I'm just seeing these pictures on Facebook pop up and, you know, it's her with this, with another person and they're, you know, at a baseball game or, you know, somewhere eating, you know, I guess dinner or what have you. And I'm just like, what's going on? She's, you know, you're not telling me anything. And, you know, I eventually found out that she was dating this person. And, you know, our relationship became very strained after that. And I was triggered, you know, and kind of fell into deep depression that lasted about a year and a half, maybe. And it was very, yeah, it was very hard for me because she was just very public with her relationship as well. And it just affected me in a very profound way because we had gone through so much at that time. And to be cut off so abruptly and to be kind of cast aside without really an explanation.
Yeah.
Was really, that was really tough for me.
Now, was depression something you've always dealt with or was this kind of triggered by that?
Looking back at certain events in my life, I think depression has always been with me. Mm-hmm. I think I really had my first actual episode probably when I was about 12. And that goes back to, you know, other things that had happened, in my life. I did experience, some childhood, sexual trauma, when I was younger. You know, kind of dealing with, recovering from that was hard.
Yeah. Well, I'm very sorry that happened to you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I appreciate that. I it's something that I am beginning to speak on more. Mm-hmm. For a long time, I kind of kept it to myself. Just because I knew other people would be affected by, you know, would be affected by what they would find out about me and what had happened at that time.
Understandable.
Yeah. So I'm still kind of dealing with it and grappling with it, but you know, there are certain people that know, you know, the ones that I think would be more closely affected by it know, and you know, I think that has brought me to a place of ease and comfort because now the truth is, you know, is out there and I can kind of move on with my life.
Do you think that's part of why you didn't come out sooner? Or do you think that there was just more of a fear just in general of coming out?
I think it did have something to do with that. Mm-hmm. With my overall general fear of like revealing all of myself.
Sure.
To people. Because it's I mean, you don't know how people are going to view that.
Sure.
You know? And there were still things that I needed to answer for myself. And things that I needed to understand about, you know, those situations. And I just wasn't ready to divulge that kind of, you know, that information. And I wasn't ready to have that conversation.
Sure.
And I'm still not quite there yet. It's still a slow process for me. But it has been getting better with time. Like I said, I'm a lot more, I feel like a lot of the weight has been lifted because I've spoken to those that I felt would be the most affected by, you know, my past, what had happened to me.
Were you surprised at all by how people reacted, good or bad?
To my childhood trauma?
Well, that, but mostly towards coming out. I mean, I guess what I'm getting at is, were you pleasantly surprised? You know, were people more or less accepting?
Coming out mm-hmm. as far as being, you know, a lesbian. Mm-hmm. I had mixed reactions.
Okay.
I mean, my sister and brother were like all open arms. They embraced me with love. My friends, all of my friends basically embraced me with love. Mm-hmm. I've had certain family members, my parents in particular, that didn't take it, so well. Could have been worse. However, I know there are other people, queer individuals that have told their parents, and their parents have kicked them out, you know, put them on the street. You know, others that have been, you know, that have faced far worse consequences. You know, there have been people that have been killed, you know, for coming out. For me, it was just, you know, my mom, I don't think my mom really knew how to deal with it or cope with it initially. She's come around since that time, though. I think she wanted to learn more and understand, like, why I would, you know, why I was in this life and why I guess why I was this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think after some research, and my mom is that type of person. She's like a very scholastic based kind of person. Like she was valedictorian of the class and everything. So she embraces knowledge a lot. So she did a lot of research, and I think her perspective has evolved quite a bit. I won't say she fully embraces it, but she has a better understanding of where I stand. My dad, I don't know, the jury's still out with him. when he found out about me, my sister actually told him. My sister and I had a conversation, and she had asked me flat, you know, do you want me to tell dad? And I was like, I think it would sound better coming from you, because I don't know if I could, I don't know if I could deal with his reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So when he found out, he really couldn't say anything because he was around other family members, and he put on a really, really good poker face at the time. But once we were alone, you know, he kind of lashed out at me and, you know, kind of, you know, said some other things, you know, you're not going to be in a will, and, you know, just really crazy stuff. I don't think he really knew how to deal with it. But I think after he calmed down, it, you know, I think he, I don't know if he so much, embraced it or, you know, is all for it, but I think he just accepts it and understands that this is who I am. And there's really nothing you can do about that, you know. We've had conversations about, you know, certain relationships I've had, and, you know, I've talked to him about, you know, dating and things of that nature. And he's actually been very open and honest, and he's actually given me advice, and that's been good. But again, you know, I'm not really sure where he stands, like, fully, but I'm just happy that, you know, I can at least talk to him and not feel like I'm going to face any kind of dire consequences.
Sure.
So
you can be yourself. You don't have to pretend to be anybody else.
Right. So, but for the most part, it's been mostly positive. Like I said, my friends have been great. My friends were like, oh, are you? Okay. I don't care. You know?
Yeah.
So, that's been awesome. They just see me for me, you know, and even with my nieces and nephews, like they embrace me for who I am as well, you know, and I didn't really have to come out to them. They just kind of knew. Yeah. Our aunt is a part of the queer community, and we just see her as our auntie, you know?
Yeah. So
that was great.
Kids are the best. Aren't they?
Kids are the best.
Aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just amazing.
Yeah.
I love my nieces and nephews so much. I almost look at them as if they're my children, because I did help raise, at least half of them. I have a lot of nieces and nephews. they're more insightful than they know.
Oh yeah. 100%. I mean, if you don't teach them hate or discrimination or anything like that, they have no idea. You know, they won't, they just go 100% on instinct, and most of the time, you know, or I believe anyway, most people are good. And kids are the embodiment of that.
Right. Do you have kids of your own, or?
I do, actually. Yeah, I've got three. So I've got a 8-year-old, a 2-year-old, well, almost two. She'll be two in July, and then a 3-year-old.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So we've got a couple.
That's amazing. Yeah, I love kids. And I think, you know, because I went through what I went through when I was younger, like I'm very protective of children when I see them. And I always have that, especially with my nieces and nephews, I have a very close bond with them. And I let them know, like, hey, if you have anything you need to share with me, like, you can share it with me, and you know you have my support no matter what. We have that, like I said, we have that kind of relationship, and it's great, you know.
Do you have kids or want any of your own?
I don't have kids of my own. Maybe eventually.
Yeah.
I would love to have kids of my own. That would be great.
I always like to ask, because it's interesting. Like this generation doesn't seem to want them. Like a lot of my friends don't have kids, or want kids, or you know, and we're all in our 30s, 30 plus. So I was thinking it's kind of interesting to see when people do want kids still, because it's, I don't know, it's nice. Like I, it sounds selfish, but I just like love being a father, and like, I guess I want people to like experience that. as odd and selfish as that sounds, I almost feel like, you know, hey, just try it.
Right. But, yeah, I, you know, I, I don't know. I think with this generation, at least, you know, to the people I speak to, I don't know if it's necessarily, well, so I think some people don't want to have kids at all. My best friend doesn't want to have children at all.
There's a lot of fear in this day and age to have kids.
Yeah. I think for her in particular, though, it's not about fear. She just, she doesn't like kids at all.
Well, hey,
which is a funny thing.
That's okay too. And that's probably a smart decision. If you don't like kids, you probably shouldn't have them, I guess.
Right. So, you know, she's always told me, yeah, when you have kids, don't invite me to your house. Let's just meet out somewhere.
That's honesty.
But she's an amazing person, like, regardless of that. But,
yeah.
You know, with other kids, I mean, with other adults, you know, I think most people want to live first and kind of like experience life before they bring another life, you know, into the world. And I think that's mostly the mentality this day and age.
Oh, sure.
It's kind of like, you know, if you have a child, like, you're giving up a certain part of your freedom and your life, because they become your priority and your responsibility, your main responsibility.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that.
So I think that's part of the mentality that's happening now. So it's kind of like, you know, let me establish myself. Let me make sure I'm not, you know, in any kind of crazy debt. Let me get a kind of a grip of how this world works before I, you know, have children.
We're all still kind of figuring it out anyway.
Yeah, most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
You're not gonna have all the answers.
Oh no, yeah. But I think once you figure that out, life gets a lot easier.
Yeah.
But
so,
sorry, I didn't mean to get you completely off track there. That's my fault.
No, it's okay.
So you found out that V had a significant other, and she was living in North Carolina again, and kind of threw you off guard and sent you into a depression. How did you get yourself out of that? How'd you overcome that?
Well, for me, I did eventually see a therapist.
Okay.
At some point, I wasn't able to stay with them too long because, you know, it started to become kind of expensive at the time.
Oh yeah.
But I did see a therapist for a while, and did talk about it, and that helped. That actually helped a lot. Even in that short span of time, just speaking to someone and being able to kind of unload that pain and that burden was important, and just kind of embracing. I think embracing the pain and embracing the reality that you're in this state at this very moment, and knowing that eventually you'll see the light at the end of the tunnel. I think that's how I cope with mine. I mean, I've been through at least three episodes in my life, and that's always been my, I guess, beacon of hope. Just knowing that it won't last forever. Because you know what it's like to be depressed. It's just, for me personally, I felt like I was in a suspended state. I almost felt like I was drunk. Like I'm watching myself do these crazy things and things that I normally wouldn't do if I were of sound mind at the time, you know, I just, you know, a lot of times just felt very sluggish. I had no motivation to really do anything. I felt like things were moving in slow motion. It was just very disorienting. Things that I thought I was doing like normally, I later realized, oh, something was off, or, you know, like I wasn't totally thinking straight. It feels like you are at some points, and then once you see the end result of what you've done, it's like, wow, I really wasn't thinking straight.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah, definitely.
So I was, it was very, I mean, the episodes, those episodes are tough. They're very tough. But you just always have to keep in mind that, you know, this weight will be lifted. You'll be out of this. Like you have to come to grips with it and embrace it. You can't, you know, and I've done research and I've read, you know, other material, regarding, you know, depression, and, you know, the things that I have read, I've always said, you know, the best thing to do is to embrace, you know, your current reality, but to also know that, you know, eventually it will subside and you'll find yourself, you know, back to normal. And that's how I've always dealt with mine. And if, you know, like I said, my episodes have lasted a while, usually at least a year, which is, I mean, it feels like it feels like an eternity when you're in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's also been a good place for me to write. And when I wrote songs about V, you know, I was in that state, you know. Well, when I first came up with the concept, I was actually very happy and very much in love. But then in the middle of all of that, you know, I went from, you know, I love her, I love this person, to, oh, I can't stand this person. Like,
yeah,
you know, they make me sad. I hate them, you know. But then, you know, afterwards, it kind of leveled itself out, and I was able to see the complete picture in hindsight. So I could take, you know, those experiences and kind of look at them from the outside, and kind of I had a better understanding of what I was going through and why certain things were happening, and I was able to narrate and, you know, kind of orchestrate a better story, as a result. So, I found writing, you know, in those times to be very cathartic. And I find I write, deeper and, more weighty material, in those moments. So, I actually wrote, there was another song that it's probably one of my favorite, hooks. There's a song that I wrote with Bob Alloy, and it's called Your Truth. And I wrote that hook when I was just coming out of my, episode. And I was writing about the feeling of being released from depression, you know, that day that you realize like the weight has been lifted and you're back to your normal self. And it's just like it's an indescribable feeling. It's as when I went through it, I was just extremely elated. I just felt like a new person. I felt more enlightened. And I just saw the world and I saw my life from a different kind of perspective. I feel like that's probably one of the best hooks that I've ever had. If you if you ever check it out, it's called Your Truth by Bob Holloway. Definitely check it out. But I feel like I write better material when I'm in that state or once I'm coming out of it.
Can we find that on iTunes also?
Yes. Okay. Yes. It's everywhere.
All right, perfect. I want to make sure everybody knows where to go and where they can find everything. Obviously, your album is on iTunes, and everybody can find it on there. But I'll also go ahead and put all the links in the description and everything like that to make sure.
Okay.
This album is basically, you know, or, you know, not to minimize it or anything, but a journey from being very in love to kind of realizing maybe it wasn't what you thought it was to accepting and overcoming that. Am I wrong in saying that?
No, not at all. As I say in the description in Bandcamp, it's a story of falling in love, falling out of love, and then finding love again. That's in a nutshell how I felt when I experienced it. You know, I lost this person, but at the end of it, I found myself. I found more of myself and gained so much more from going through what I went through with this person. So I don't feel any kind of regret or sadness or any kind of ill will even towards that person. Like, in my physical copy of the album, I thank her for taking me on that roller coaster ride, because there were so many things that I discovered about myself, through our interactions and through the heartbreak, she was a part of that. There's no, I can't deny that. So I tell other people the story and they're like, wow, she really messed you up. And it's like, no, not really. It was a part of growing up, and, she was part of a lesson that I needed to learn. And you have to embrace the good and the bad, because both leave you with a sense of something. It's just up to you to really, figure out what that something is. Life can't always be good.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, it's fine. You can proceed.
I was just going to ask, what do you think the biggest or best thing you've learned about yourself through this whole process was?
I definitely realized how strong I was. Going through the depression and just dealing with just the weight of it all and some of the things that I messed up on, even when I was depressed, dealing with things that I encountered at work. Dealing with other people, I realized my strength, and I realized, my fragility, and that was okay, but it helped me also, understand other people, when they may be going through, an episode themselves. Kind of seeing the signs and sympathizing with them. When I went through my depression, I understood. I had a conversation with my brother, who had, I had realized later on, had gone through his own battle with depression. His was a little different. My brother wanted to be like a famous singer. He was part of a group that was almost signed to a major record label, and he would unfortunately, like, he was very close to being signed, and it just didn't happen for whatever reason. And he fell into a deep state of depression, and I didn't realize what it was until I went through my battle, and I had that talk with him. And I told him, like, I understand now. You know, before I just thought you were, you know, just being lazy and just not putting in your all because you didn't want to try. Now I understand that you couldn't help that. You know, you were mentally in a state where you felt like, I guess it was a debilitating state.
Mm-hmm.
You felt paralyzed, and I know how that feels. I mean, he's out of that state now, and he's doing a lot better now, but you know, I've really had a heart to heart with him, and I think he and I became closer as a result. Like I said, ultimately, I think I learned how to sympathize with others. And I learned that, you know, I could be that person, that shoulder that they need to lean on, you know, if they, you know, go through a situation like that. You know, I could be that support system for them. So I think that's what I learned a lot. I learned the most from my own episode.
Yeah, and really beautiful. And keep going. Yeah. Keep going. I'm sorry. I'm terrible at that.
I know. I'm sorry. I know I can talk a little. But,
no. I love it. So keep going.
I think it brought out more of my humanity. I think it just made me realize it more so. And I think it made me a better person.
I love that you put it that way, that it made you realize more of your humanity. I think we need more of that, you know? I think we need more humanity. Yeah. And if we had more humanity, you know, it would be a much better place to live in.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, living in New York City, I mean, you see people on how they react to certain situations, and sometimes it's, you know, I mean, I look at certain things, and I try to, some people just want to lash out and, you know, get defensive. And for me, it's okay. I want to understand why you're reacting this way. Or I want to understand what's going through your mind. And some people think I'm weird for, you know, responding that way. And it's,
no, I don't,
like, you know,
I'm not one of those people. I appreciate that kind of response, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't get that. I don't get that often. Some people are like, no, you should have just yelled at him, or you should have just said this, or you should have just done that. And it's like, I don't have that. I don't have that need to respond that way. Mm-hmm. I really don't. Yeah. Like, I'd rather understand why they're, you know, why they're responding that way. I don't, you know, it's not like I'm hurt by them or anything like that. Like, I don't, why would I respond that way unless I felt threatened, or, and I don't feel that.
Yeah.
you know, I'm not trying to show off, and I'm not trying to see, you know, I'm not trying to be big and bad, you know, show, you know, put on a show for other people. Like, no, you know, I want to, this is how I want to respond. So, you know.
Well, yeah. And most people, I think, want to be understood. So I think that having that type of response is actually like really de-escalating to a lot of situations probably.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it does. And you know, at one point, you know, with my job, I was once a supervisor, and I think that was one of my strengths, that I was able to de-escalate certain situations and really in certain conflicts with a positive resolution.
Yeah.
You know, we would have some, so I work for TSA, and we would have certain passengers come through, and they would, you know, some of them would come, I guess, with attitudes, and, you know, they would, you know, greet you or initiate a conversation with attitude. You know, thinking that you were, thinking that you're going to lash out at them. And when they find that, you know, you do the opposite, they kind of, you know, calm down, like, oh, okay, I could speak to this person. Most people just want to be heard, like you said. Like, they just want to be heard, and they just want to be understood.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was actually pretty good at that. And I still do that, you know, even in the position that I am. And now, you know, I'm good at bringing things down and calming things down and really getting to the heart of the issue. So that's what's most important to me. and it makes everyone's day better.
Oh yeah, definitely. I agree.
So,
Well, let's see. What is your favorite song on the album? Like, if you had to pick just one.
Just one?
Yeah, just if you had to pick, I'm going to make it tough for you. So if you had to pick just one song, what's your favorite and why?
Oh, man. It has to be between, yeah, they're all my babies.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. That's why I made it hard for you.
Wow. It has to be between, I think, Versions and Vulnerable.
Okay.
It's definitely between those two. I think those are the ones that I spent the most time with as well.
Okay.
Versions takes on, you know, that was a challenge for me because when I picked out the title, I was thinking of why. The song is basically about, you know, how Dean went from this person that I knew, mm-hmm. that I thought I knew anyway, to this complete stranger. They had just done a complete 180, and I just didn't know who they were. And I kind of likened that to like an app or a program that you get that you're initially familiar with, and you grow to, you know, like it and enjoy it. And then they come out with a new version of the program or the app, and it looks completely different. And it's just like, what? And you have to get reacquainted with, you know, the program and the layout, and what have you. So I kind of compared that to, you know, how I saw her and how I, you know, interacted with her in both situations. So the challenge was to write it in a way where it's kind of like I'm using computer jargon and telling that story, you know, through those words. And that was, I think that was kind of fun too. And I just love the track itself. Like that track has evolved from where it was, like when I first started to track to produce that track. It was just a very different sound. And then, you know, I and my co-producer, Peter Anthony Red, just kind of took it to another level. And I think it evoked the emotion that I was looking for, which was very raw and very, even a little edgy, you know, because of the way I felt when I felt like she had betrayed me, mm-hmm. or, let me down and broke my heart. So I think that song has a very deep and personal connection. Vulnerable was another challenge for me, because I initially wanted to write something kind of scaled down and simple. Initially when I wrote it, it was just me singing and me, playing the piano. I just wanted that to be scaled down and simple, and as simple as that, because, you know, like I said, it is a song about depression, and I wanted it to be a very solitary kind of performance. And then eventually, Peter Anthony Red suggested that I throw in some more, instruments and throw in more vocals, and it worked that way as well. So I'm not even, I'm not upset with the outcome of that song. I think it definitely conveys what I wanted in that composition as well. And I think it still kind of achieves that, what I was looking for. And again, another deep and, personal track. So I don't know. I don't know which one has the slight edge, I mean, maybe Vulnerable, I would say.
They're both very different. Maybe has this. When I was listening, they're both very, very different songs. Like, Vulnerable is very melodic and very, like, the lyrics really drive that song, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I think that Versions is just like very, it's really like catchy and really like upbeat almost, which is interesting because it's not an upbeat song, if you know the backstory of it.
Right.
But I think it's also like speaks to a more general audience because it's kind of, it doesn't have to just be about a relationship, it can be about friendships, about, I don't know, anything really. There's always different versions of people. And I really like the analogy that it's a program and now they've put out a new version of it and you have to reacquaint yourself. I like that analogy a lot, actually. I never ever thought of it that way. And once I heard that song and once you said it, it like clicked right away. And I was like, oh yeah, this makes so much sense. Especially in today's world, everything is compared to technology. Like, why haven't I thought of that before? But, yeah, they're so different. I think for me personally, and you can make what you want of this, but I think Vulnerable is probably my favorite song on the album. I'm always drawn to that kind of like melodic, very lyric driven song. So I think that's the one for me. But I'll let you cheat and you can have two favorites. How about that?
Yes, because it's so hard.
Yeah, that'll work. We'll let you have two. But
it hurts that you asked me that. No.
Well, I'm sorry. I apologize.
No, it's fine.
But before we go, I know I've already kept you on here for a long time, but before we go, I'd love if you told everybody, obviously they can get it on iTunes. And before anybody forgets, it's called Songs for V, by Stephanie Gale. And, I want you to let everybody know where you can get the album, where they can download it, besides iTunes, just in case.
Yeah, you can get songs about me pretty much everywhere. It's on all major streaming platforms, Spotify, Tidal, iTunes, Apple Music, Deezer, also Bandcamp. You could go there as well. It's on YouTube Music as well, and it's on my YouTube channel. I have a full version that you could just play all the way through. It has some visuals in the video as well. So, you know, it's not too boring. but the link that I share with you has all the landing pages. So,
perfect.
Once they click on there, you can see all the streaming sites that it's available on.
Okay, so just like how it came up for me then when I clicked on it, it showed me like iTunes, Spotify, like a list of everything.
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
Yes, correct.
Then
yeah.
I'll be putting that on my description then. And I can't thank you enough for doing this. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us and willing to be vulnerable for everybody. You know, I it's not an easy thing for anybody to do, and so I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I enjoyed conversing with you. It was an enjoyable time.
I'm glad to hear that.
We get to talk again.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I would love to speak again, privately or on another episode. That'd be great.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds great. I would love to do that.